Hello, my name is Jared Robinson, and today I'll be talking to you about modernist poetry. But first, I'll give you a brief history of modernism. By 1900, the world was an entirely different place compared to the rest of human history. The recent innovations of the time period created an optimistic view of the future in which man would become perfect through technology and form a utopian society. However, with the end of World War I, many people became disillusioned with the world and wished to forge a new path, one where the mistakes that led to World War I wouldn't happen. And this is what led to modernism. The characteristics of modernism. Modernist writers had many objectives, and among these was to break with the past, reject literary traditions that were outdated, reject the aesthetic values of their predecessors, reject wording that seemed too refined to suit an era of technological advancements and global violence. They also wished to break with romantic views and styles and became skeptical of language's coherence. Modernist poets often had stylistic experimentation and disruptive syntax for their styles. They also used stream of consciousness and had a theme of alienation, which is where the characters feel disconnected from people and or society and the world. They also focused a lot on imagery. Some examples of modernist poets include William Carlos Williams, E.E. Cummings, Ezra Pound, and T.S. Eliot, whose poem we'll be reading and talking about today. The poem I chose was The Wasteland, and my partner Hannah Keene is talking about the appendage for this poem. The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot. Nam sibillam quidem comus ego ipse oculus meis vidi in ampulla pendere et cum illi quere discernit sibilla t delis respondebat ilia pothinine fellow. 1. The burial of the dead. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of a dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dual roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow, feeding a little life dried tubers. Summer surprised us, coming over the Starnberger Sea with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in the sunlight into the Hofgarten and drank coffee and talked for an hour. Vengar kein Russen stam aus Litauen et ex Deutsch. And when we were children staying at the Archduke's, my cousin said he took me out on a sled, and I was frightened. He said, Mary, Mary, hold on tight, and down we went, into the mountains, there you feel free. I read much of the night and go south in the winter. What are the roots that clutch? What branches grow out of this stony rubbish? Son of man, you cannot say or guess, for you only know a heap of broken images where the sun beats, and the dead tree gives no shelter, the cricket no relief, and the dry stone no sound of water. Only there is a shadow under this red rock. Come in under the shadow of this red rock, and I will show you something different from either your shadow at morning striding behind you or your shadow at evening rising beneath. I will show you fear in a handful of dust. Frisch, wet, der Wind, der Heimat, zu, mein, kind, quo, vilest, du. You gave me hyacinths first a year ago. They called me the hyacinth girl. Yet when we came back late from the hyacinth garden, your arms full and your hair wet, I could not speak and my eyes lay. I was neither living nor dead, and I knew nothing. Looking into the heart of light, the silence. Ode un leer das mir. Madame Sosatris, famous clairvoyant, had a bad cold. Nevertheless, is known to be the wisest woman in Europe. With a wicked pack of cards, here, said she, is your card, the drowned Phoenician sailor. Those are pearls that where his eyes look. Here is Belladonna, the lady of the rocks, the lady of situations. Here is the man with three staves, and here the wheel. And here is the one-eyed merchant, and this card, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see, and I do not find the hangman, fear death by water. I see crowds of people walking round in a ring. Thank you. If you see dear Miss Equitone, Tell her I bring the horoscope myself. One must be so careful these days. Unreal City. Under the brown fog of a winter dawn, the crowd flowed over the London Bridge. So many. I had not thought death had undone so many. Sighs, short and infrequent, were exhaled, and each man fixed his eyes before his feet. Flowed up the hill and down King William Street, to where St. Mary Woolnoth kept the hours, with a dead sound on the final stroke of nine. There I saw one I knew, and I stopped him, crying, Stetson, you who were with me in the ships at Malay, that corpse you planted last year in the garden, has it begun to sprout? Will it bloom this year, or has the sudden frost disturbed its bed? Oh, keep the dog far hence, that's friend to men, or with his nails you'll dig it up again. You hypocrite lecteur, mon semblable, mon frère. 2. Chess. The chairs he sat in, like a burnished throne, glowed on the marble work. The glass held up by standards wrought with fruited vines, from which a golden cupidon peeped out. Another hid his eyes behind his wing. Another doubled the flames of seven-branched candelabra, reflecting light upon the table as the glitter of her jewels rose to meet it. From satin cases poured in rich profusion, and vials of ivory and colored glass, unstoppered lurked her strange synthetic perfumes. Unguent powder or liquid troubled, confused, and drowned in the sense of odors stirred by the air. That freshened from the window, these ascended, and fattening in the prolonged candle flames, flung their smoke into the lacaria, stirring the pattern on the coffered ceiling. Huge sea wood fed with copper, burnt green and orange, framed by the colored stone, in which sad light a carved dolphin swam. Above, the antique mantle was displayed, as though a window gave upon the sylvan scene to change of Philomel by the barbarous king, so rudely forced, yet there the nightingale, filled with all the desert and inviolable voice, and still she cried, and still the world pursues, jug, jug, to dirty ears. And other withered stumps of time were told upon the walls, staring forms leaned out, leaning, hushing the room enclosed. Footsteps shuffled on the stair, under the firelight, under the brush, her hair spread out in fiery points, glowed into the words, then would be savagely still. My nerves are bad tonight, yes, bad. Stay with me, speak to me, why do you never speak? Speak, what are you thinking of, what thinking, what? I never know what you are thinking. Think. I think we are in rats' alleys, where the dead men lost their bones. What is that noise? The wind under the door. What is that noise now? What is the wind doing? Nothing again. Nothing. Do you know nothing? Do you see nothing? Do you remember nothing? I remember. Those are pearls that were his eyes. Are you alive or not? Is there nothing in your head? But... oh, that Shakespearean rag. It's so elegant, so intelligent. What shall I do now? What shall I do? I shall rush out as I am and walk the street, my hair down so. What shall we do tomorrow? What shall we ever do? The hot water at 10. And if it rains, a closed car at 4. We shall play a game of chess. Pressing lidless eyes and waiting for a knock upon the door. When Lil's husband got demobbed, I said, I didn't mince my words, I said to her myself, hurry up, please, it's time. Now Albert's coming back, make yourself a bit smart. He'll want to know what you've done with that money he gave you. To get yourself some teeth, you did, I was there. You have them all out, Lil, and get a nice set. He said, I swear, I can't bear to look at you, and no more can't I. I said, and think of poor Albert, he's been in the army for 4 years. He wants a good time, and if you don't give it him, there's others will, I said. Oh, is there, she said. Something of that, I said. Then I'll know who to thank, she said, and give me a straight look. Hurry up, please, it's time. If you don't like it, you can get on with it, I said. Others can pick and choose if you can. But if Albert makes off, it won't be for lack of telling. You ought to be ashamed, I said, to look so antique, and her only 31. I can't help it, she said, pulling a long face. It's them pills I took to bring it off, she said. She's had 5 already and nearly died of young George. The chemist said it would be all right, but I've never been the same. You are a proper fool, I said. Well, without Albert won't leave you alone. There it is, I said. What you get married for if you don't want children? Hurry up, please. It's time. Well, that Sunday, Albert was home. They had a hot gammon, and they asked me in to dinner to get the beauty of it hot. Hurry up, please. It's time. Hurry up, please. It's time. Good night, Bill. Good night, Lou. Good night, May. Good night. Ta-ta. Good night. Good night. Good night, ladies. Good night, sweet ladies. Good night. Good night. Now, that was only two out of the five parts of T.S. Eliot's poem, but I can already pick out many examples of modernist characteristics just out of those two parts. Eliot's desire to break with the past traditions of like literature is shown in how he lacks a rhyme scheme and how he just, it's written almost like a story. He rejects the aesthetic values of his predecessors because he talks about how various things are bad, like in section one at the very beginning when he says, April is the cruelest month, reading lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. And I say this because usually when up. New things grow out of like the bones and ashes of the old. People see that as a good thing, such as like growth and renewal, but it almost seems like he portrays it as bad. And you can see his rejection of refined wording and like the simplicity of what he writes. Like he doesn't use any like fancy words that are like that people wouldn't really know. And disrupted syntax is shown in the poem where it says, in a part of the poem in like section three, where it says, trams and dusty trees, Highbury bore me, Richmond and Kew undid me, by Richmond I raised my knees, supine on the floor of a narrow canoe. And a theme of alienation is shown by Eliot when he says, a crowd flowed over London Bridge, so many I had not thought death had undone so many. Sighs, short and infrequent, were exhaled, and each man fixed his eyes before his feet. Now, earlier I had mentioned how World War I had influenced many of the many modernists, and this would be an example of World War I's influence on it. Because it's talking about how he had not thought that death had undone so many, and many people had died in World War I.
The poem, The Hollow Men, by T.S. Eliot, is a poem of boundaries. It can be considered an appendage to Eliot's The Wasteland. This poem has many underlying meanings and is written in free verse. However, it proves to have many offerings for a reader in and among itself. It is remarkable for its music, the short lines, the unsteady rhythms, the irregular rhymes, and help in producing a sorrowful music regarding the condition of the Hollow Men. The setting of this poem is the Hollow Men live in the desert netherworld, kind of like outer space. Everything is dry except the branch of the river Styx, also known as the entrance to death. The Hollow Men are stuck between life and death, also known as purgatory or limbo, which is kind of like what is used in religion, mostly. The dry landscape represents a world that once had life or faith in the figure of water, but it has disappeared. The speaker of this poem uses a dramatic monologue with various voices. The poem is mainly spoken in first person plural, except when a singular voice speaks in the poem's second part. The speaker can be considered fractured, such as something like a broken mirror. In the beginning, the speaker starts out as one voice, but by the end, they, the multiple voices, are dancing around a prickly pear cactus and singing a children's song. The allusion of this poem is in the first epigraph, and lines 95 through 98, which state, "This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper." The last lines of the poem allude to a modification of the song, "The Mulberry Bush." The first epigraph alludes to a quote from Joseph Conrad's novel, Heart of Darkness. There's alliteration in the lines, "rat's coat, crow's skin, cross staves," and it has a repetition of C and S sounds. There's assonance in the line of "the supplication of a dead man's hand" by repeating the sound "an." Onomatopoeia is used in the line stating, "not with a bang, but a whimper." Bang and whimper are both words that imitate the sounds they describe. The poem places them in contrast for an anticlimactic ending. There's irony within the poem by replacing the mulberry bush with a prickly pear, suggesting desiccation rather than the expected fertility. There's also an ironic anticlimax in the last line because it subverts our expectations of both the end of the world and the end of a poem. There are many metaphors and similes within this poem. We are the hollow men, we are the stuffed men. The speakers compare themselves to scarecrows. The eyes reappear as the perpetual star, multifoliate rose. The eyes become the perpetual star, a symbol for the Christian faith. Is a symbol of both Jesus and paradise. The line, "our dried voices, when we whisper together, are quiet and meaningless, as wind in dry grass or rat's feet over broken glass in our dry cellar." This line is when the speaker is comparing their voices to the sounds of wind in dry grass and rat's feet over broken glass. But they're doing this because they both have qualities of being quiet and meaningless. The repetition of the poem is the most important and abundant feature. It connects different sections of the poem. The structural repetition in the lines, in the first and second lines, that state, "we are the hollow men, we are the stuffed men," and the first lines of part three stating, "this is the dead land, this is the cactus land," proves Eliot reinforces the description of states and existences using the verb to be in the present simple form. Lines 11 through 12, "shape without form, shade without color, paralyzed forces, gesture without motion," creates the structure A without B and C without D. And it's used to highlight the main themes, meaningless, nothingness, and paralysis. Another form of repetition is carried out through negation. The line, "eyes I dare not meet in dreams, these do not appear. Let me be no nearer, no nearer, not that final meaning. The eyes are not here, there are no eyes here." Eliot uses negation to express sorrow and guilt, trying to avoid the inevitability of death. It has been demonstrated time and time again that repetition is the fundamental element of the Hollow Men, as it can be seen from the beginning to the end. Everything in this poem is circular, repetitive, and somewhat crazy, like a group of children singing and dancing around a prickly pear, which happens to be a very prickly cactus. Foregrounding is to make something the most prominent or important feature. Eliot uses different literary mechanisms in order to foreground items. Repetition may be considered a way of foregrounding, but there are many others. The first two lines, stating, "We are the hollow men, we are the stuff men," are an example of foregrounding. The words hollowed and stuffed make us as readers see the double star opposition and get stuck into our minds as if the rest of the words in the verses included don't exist. We focus mainly on the words hollow and the words stuff and don't really see the other words in the line. In line 4, headpiece is foregrounded, emphasizing the fact that it is the headpiece and not another part of the hollowed or stuffed men. In part 2, a tree in line 26 is also foregrounded, as it occupies a place unexpected. Eliot uses foregrounding in lines 25, 34, 36, 47, 55, 61, and 64 by using individual items or ideas appearing alone in a whole verse. Throughout the poem, there are a couple of instances of symbolism and imagery, lines 31 through 34 stating, Let me also wear such deliberate disguises, rat's coat, cow skin, cross staves in a field. Possesses a tight relationship with an image of a scarecrow, as it is immobile and an inanimate anthropomorphic figure fulfilled with straw. Lines 72 through 90. Use the shadow repeated in a frame and is a symbol of death. Without the comfort of faith in God, death paralyzes all action. The voices and eyes, which can be assumed to be the stars, seem to be appallingly disembodied. They appear as independent and supernatural concepts apart from the hollow man's existence. The conception of the eyes has to do with that of the star, first appearing as a fading star, then it becomes a dying star, and then later it becomes an eternal star. Its connection with life and its religious interpretation in relation to after death superiority is clear. The eyes also symbolize moral certainty and judgment. Lines 61 through 62 state, "The eyes are not here, there are no eyes here." If there are no eyes, then that must mean that the hollow men are blind. The poem references to the realm where the hollow men takes place is truly symbolical. It was described as death's other kingdom or death's dream kingdom, meaning there is another world of death apart from itself, and that it is possible to dream even when you are dead. In other words, it is to be considered a wasteland. The only clear reference to time in the poem has a powerful piece of symbolism. It's obvious this is not a rite of resurrection, but abortion, an interruption of life. The prickly pear is known to be sour, thorny, and sinister, and it is also a phallic symbol. It provokes revulsion and disgust, reinforcing once again the idea of infertility. The epigraphs in the very beginning represents two different types of hollowed or stuffed men. Those of which is "He Who Lacks Soul," Mr. Kurtz, and "He Who Lacks a Body," Guy Fawkes's dummy. These represent both physical and spiritual emptiness. Mr. Kurtz, "He Dead," as stated previously, is an allusion to Conrad's Heart of Darkness. This novel portrays the empty nature of men. Kurtz, a European slave trader, lacks a soul, which makes him the epitome of a true hollow man. The speaker of this novel is most likely some kind of non-native English speaker, representing another kind of hollow man. This verse answers the question like, where's Mr. Kurtz? As if we didn't already know he's dead. The idea of ignored death can be related to emptiness. A Penny for the Old Guy is called out on November 5th by children who attempt to buy fireworks to burn straw figures of Fox. On this day, Fox tried to blow up the Parliament building. In this verse, old and guy are capitalized, which emphasizes the fact that the puppet represents a poor old mortal guy, as like, poor old me, he needs to be given a little bit of charity. Within the first two verses, Eliot established the setting and the theme and begins a rhythmic pattern that will hold true for at least four out of the five sections of the poem. At the end of the poem, we get a series of between statements. Eliot presumably is talking about the interim state between life and death. Although, we are not talking about the end of our life, but in fact, the very beginning, between conception and creation. What is a baby after it is born, after it is conceived, but before it is born? Life is very long, and to the words of the Lord's Prayer, for thine is the kingdom, suggests almost the divine miracle of human life, but it has to be balanced by the hollow man, the neither living nor dead. It is tempting to propose the hollow men are souls of babies who never even made it. The hollow man portrays poetic consciousness in which nostalgia for the state of heavenly purity conflicts with a search for long-lasting form of order through denial and isolation. A common observation is that the poem expresses the depths of Eliot's despair. He constructs a desolate world to explore mankind's evasion from spiritual intention. The focus is on the hollow men's inability to interact with each other and with the spirituality that is their only hope. The hollow men represent all humankind and their tragic existence. The last lines of the poem, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper, are among the most famous in literature and speak differently to despair that defines human existence.
The poems The Wasteland and The Hollow Man are much alike. Both poems are written in free verse, meaning they do not rhyme. They are similar in manners that they both depict modern human lives, include life and death situations. The speakers are broken. They contain hopelessness and depression. The poem The Hollow Man is an appendage to the poem The Wasteland and is read as an extension of the same design of quest and failure.
The Hollow Man was published halfway through the modernist decade between The Wasteland in 1922 and Eliot's conversion to Christianity in 1927. They share a number of features, a five-part structure, use of allusions, Book of the Common Prayer in The Wasteland, and The Lord's Prayer in The Hollow Man, along with bits of classic nursery rhymes like London Bridge is Falling Down in The Wasteland and Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush in The Hollow Man, and the references to a sort of wasteland world populated by rats and lost souls.
So, what I thought about The Wasteland was, I was kind of confused at first because it made like several references to things like tarot cards, but I did notice the nursery rhyme like reference, London Bridge is Falling Down, but like one of the tarot card references was the Lady of Belladonna, Lady of the Rocks, Lady of Situations, which was apparently a tarot card, and it also talked about like Mistress Sorceries or something, where I probably butchered that, but it talked about that, and apparently she was like one of the more famous like tarot card users. Like, she got pretty accurate with it, and it talked about, and like it mentioned several others, like the wheel and like the blank one, which basically talked about like someone was carrying a great burden and that burden she wasn't allowed to see. But yeah, it also made like some of the titles for like the sections didn't make a lot of sense to me until like I looked up the names and stuff.
So, yeah, that was mine. What'd you think about yours?
The Hollow Man was kind of like, it was kind of easy to follow because you could tell it was talking about, like, lost souls and, like, empty people, but it was kind of like, it kind of got confusing when they would go, we are the Hollow Men, we are the Stuff Men, which kind of like butt heads, they contradict each other, because hollow and stuffed are complete opposites. But when, like, you keep reading, it makes more sense as you go along. And then also, when I was reading, like, my, like, just, like, when I was just, like, researching the poem, it kind of, like, was cool to see that they weren't talking about, like, the in-between statements at the end of their lives. They were talking about, like, the beginning, and I wouldn't never, like, thought of that. I would just thought of, like, when you think of purgatory or limbo, which is kind of, like, what the setting of the place was, is you think of between heaven and hell when you die. But if you, they turned it around and said, as a baby, where, what are you between, like, when you're born, like, when you're conceived, but before you're born.
Did you think any of that was influenced by, like, World War One, which was, like, a major thing for modernists?
More than likely, yes. I feel like Eliot's, like, poem was influenced by his surrounding, like, atmosphere that he was in during the time he was writing. And he, especially because he was, like, in between the conversion from, like, his conversion to Christianity.
Yeah, I can see that.